everybody. I'm EJ Massa, and I'm here with Frankie Frayne.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm hiding in my basement from Gloria, who's being put down at the moment. I think we both are in that, because we're recording this at in the 8 o'clock hour.
Yes, I am actually in my entryway for the same exact reason.
Hiding
this is the life we lead.
Because if I were to fuck that up right now, I'd just be such an enemy of the state.
Exactly. I have to be in a place where my raucous laughter cannot be heard.
It's true. You do enjoy a good laugh, you know.
Oh, I have a very contagious
laugh.
Which I think is what your goal is in a lot of box mix.
Yeah, I'm let's see if I can just get EJ to burst out. There is something hysterical to me about laughter that shows up on people who aren't mic'd.
Yeah, it's true.
A long time ago, Colbert was on Bill O'Reilly, and he was cracking up O'Reilly's crew during this kind of trolley interview, and that always
mm-hmm.
cracked me up. There's a Patrice O'Neill interview about the offensiveness of comedy or whatever, and he's cracking up the crew off camera, and so there's just something always really funny to me about that.
So the reason why we're doing this is I don't know. I feel like we haven't maybe done enough for Patreon,
right?
And don't get me wrong, we do a lot for the channel itself. So I don't feel like we're slacking in our effort to the channel,
right.
But I wanted to do a little something for the Patreon subscribers, give them a little extra something, sweeten the pot.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, especially because if we decide to change the standard schedule for the main channel, we don't want to gyp the people who have been supporting us for years now.
Yeah. I thought that was a good. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some of the current things we're working on, and whether or not some of the things that we might talk about you might not see for a while, but give you a little glimpse behind the curtain of what we're working on, and also we're going to just talk about some of the things we've been watching, things that we've been looking at in the wide media scope, because I think people are interested in what we have to say
yeah.
about some of those things. So,
what am I doing when I'm not editing?
Yeah, exactly. I know. Seriously. What are you working on, Frankie? What are you working on?
Well, I think probably what's next, like the very next thing that we shoot, maybe as early as tomorrow, Saturday the 11th. Oh my God, as I say that out loud, I realize my dad's birthday is tomorrow. he's turning 72. I think, so we've been wanting to do an Aldi's Junts cart for a long time. We didn't have an Aldi's in our area.
Mm-hmm.
There was one a couple towns away, maybe 30 to 40 minutes away. That would have been easy enough to do, and we were probably going to do that, but there is now one actually in the same plaza that Ocean State Job Lot opened in Fall River, the one that we did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that same plaza is now in Aldi's. And John tells me he has strong opinions about Aldi's that he will not reveal to me until we're in the store.
Oh, wow.
That's very exciting.
He's a showman.
I won't talk to you about it. Even when the cameras are off, I'm like, okay. Apparently there's also a new grocer in that same plaza. So we'll probably shoot two episodes on the same day. And, Nina and I actually shopped at Aldi's once, kind of recently, a few months ago, and she really liked it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
maybe there'll be some conflict.
Maybe she'll have to come along. There's, we get the occasional criticism that, I suppose the most generous representation of the criticism would be that too much Gloria in the videos takes the focus away from John too much and makes it too much of a home video experience rather than content. And I mean, to those people, I would say look, I have a daughter and she's not going to be in less content.
Yeah. I mean, it's a part of life, if they say something and, they start singing songs about, can I feed you some animals? You're going to film it and you're going to put it in your video.
Yeah, I mean, it's just she's part of the crew now, and you're gonna get as much of her as you do Matt and anybody else.
Yeah.
So she'll probably come along for, I mean, that's the other cool thing about Joan's carts and why she shows up in them a lot is because they're kind of one of the few pieces of content that we shoot that she kind of like can fit into the content.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if she's running ahead and do, you know, running around in a store, like, you know, she's welcome to do that. Whereas like if we all get together in John's kitchen and shoot 3 or 4 box mats in a day, like having her like wander around and disrupt things can be really, so, you know, then we have to arrange for my mom to take her just to shoot a box mat. And
yeah,
so junk carts are just easier, you know, they don't require as much cinematography or they're not multi angle. So they're more fun. And they're also, you know, yes, they're often more fun. They're also just easier in general. I suppose the only hard part would be like, you know, if we're traveling. But like, there's been a couple times last year, especially where we actually went out on like big field trips, where we went to some place an hour away that John would never have gone in a million years, like Cracker Barrel, like that that discount store that we went to.
Yeah.
And it was just a ton of fun. And so I don't know. I'd love to. Last year was the first year that we made like one more Jump's Cart than we did Box Max. And I would love to do more Jump's Carts this year if we can find, you know, there's also an issue of like running out of stores. But
yeah, that is true. I mean, that was one of the things when we first started collaborating and the Jump's Carts started pouring in, I loved them. So more Jump's Carts, the better in my estimation. But
yeah, and just when you think you run out of stuff, like, you know, retail cycles in and out, and then there's like some new thing to talk about. So I don't think that we're gonna have a problem anytime soon there. So yeah, I'd love to make more. And I also really like, I don't have any plans currently outside of this year. I think it's a good thing every year to kind of have like some kind of new content goal. Like last year was Junk's Nest for sure.
Yeah, of course.
And for me, this year would be this tour of Vermont thing that John teased like 3-4 years ago, where he's like, I love Vermont. I'd like to go. But like, if you press him on like, well, what do you like about Vermont? He'll be like, there's this one cheese shop.
Yeah. we can at least hit that one cheese shop and maybe we can come up with something else.
So like he likes, yeah. he'll give an entire state credit for like one cheese shop.
Hey man, I like Vermont. Like, there's a lot of interesting little shops and towny stuff and country shops. So,
do you have like a reasonable amount of vacation time? Like, could you take, if you had to, like 3 or 4 days with us and do something?
I do have. I have a very generous vacation schedule. So if you plan it out, maybe we can work something out.
I think we should do it for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know how exactly it works with wives and kids, but maybe we could figure that out too. That could be a lot of fun. We're definitely doing that this year. That's my. I was just going to say I love doing obviously new shops and store knowledge and all that sort of stuff. But I also like the kind of, I don't know what you would call it, like the boutique junk carts, like Salem.
Oh yeah.
And, like the Westport Fair, the ones that are shot, you know, the Christmas Place, the ones that are shot on the GH4, they're like a little bit more sweet. The runtime tends to be like in the 20-minute range. Like they're kind of like specials.
Yeah, I like those too. Yeah, the things that just look, it's like a peek into another dimension almost.
yeah, like a place you would never normally go, but because you're making a video, you go out there.
Yeah. any updates on the documentary?
Yeah, you bet. So this has not been announced publicly, so you heard it here first, depending on when this goes up. But probably tonight. The Blu-ray is available for Till Death Do Us Part, so you can now buy a Blu-ray for $15, and that comes with a nice commentary track, that, you know, video commentary track. That we recorded a couple weeks ago that really goes in depth. It's me, EJ, John, and Nina. Nina co-directed the movie with me. EJ shot it. And John, you know, was kind of, actually John did sound on a lot of it. John used to do sound for us before he was talent. but yeah, this is a movie we had been making for years. And we kind of stopped because of Box Mac and because of the Red Cow YouTube channel. And in the last year we were able to circle back, and EJ made a really nice, EJ comic style animation that sort of sums up how Nina and I got married, and it kicks off the movie and stuff. And so there's a lot of, I think it came out really great.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed the whole process. I'm glad we can finally put a bow on it and send it out. And it was good to do EJ comic style again. It's been years since I've done it. So.
Yeah, I think we should probably, that would be a great thing to give patrons is just, let's just link them to the free YouTube unlisted link for the documentary so that anybody who's been donating to us can see the movie for free.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
That'd be a nice thing to do. But they can also buy it. So if you're still buying optical media, which you're not, it's available. I've been trying to find, I've been spending some time trying to figure out good VOD options outside of just like uploading a file on our web server that you can download for $2.99. And there's like Vimeo does it, but it's $20 a month. You have to be a pro member.
Oh, jeez.
So we have to pay a monthly bill just to support that. So I don't think it's really worth it, especially our audience is going to watch it, and then from there, it's either festivals or nothing. So we submitted to the Massachusetts Independent Film Festival, which we won a few years ago for having fun up there, and so we probably have the best chance at that, but we haven't really gotten into anything else. But I was kind of rapid firing. I was just anything that had a submission date coming up, I was submitting to. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing. It's like I was submitting to places like kind of late, and I don't, even though I've actually worked on the other side of this before, I still don't really have a good sense of like when's a good, should you submit early? Should you, does it matter? Does content win? I don't know. But the movie's done, and that's just cool. And I think we should do a stream for, a one-time, stream for the whole audience at some point.
Yeah, I think so. I've loved every stream we've done. I love interacting with fans and being in the chat. Yeah. So I think
what we would do is we would chat during the movie, and then afterwards we would go on camera and do like a Google Hangout thing.
Yeah, I think that would be a great thing to do.
Yeah.
So
there's that. Otherwise, for stuff that we're working on or things I want to do in the short term, mid term. We haven't done an after hours in like a year and a half.
Oh yeah.
that's
building up.
Those are really hard to edit, because you're, there's so many sources that you're, but they're also just they're so awesome too. Like they're such great monuments to fan interaction, and that's where a lot of the fan art clips come from and stuff. So it's worth doing. But that might be the kind of thing that I might, if this 5 years into the endeavor, I might decide, you might have to skip a Sunday or two so we can make this after hours episode. And I think if people can live with that, then that's how we'll do it. But that brings up the other issue that so we packed up the studio pretty much last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So the studio's done for, done with, no more payments required. Which is great. Because we can sort of stop spending money on something that we can't. It's not that we couldn't afford it, but the company couldn't afford it. The amount of money that we bring in. So we'll have to. I guess we'll do after hours either in John's kitchen or there's other options too. Like there's his piano room. We could set up a little thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that even the unboxings in John's room and John's living room were very intimate and fun. So I don't see us losing anything from that. And then it's not like we won't have a studio in the future. I mean, we might build our own someday.
Right. There's a couple of unboxings that need to be done real quick. Like there's, we had joked last year about like send Nina peanut butter. Cause like we thought that somebody said that they had sent peanut butter, but they hadn't. And then we joked that they should. Well, I guess somebody did. I think it might even be Air Joe.
Sent
some peanut butter, but, so I had to open that. And I actually just today received like two big Amazon packages that sound like they have Mac inside of them. So there's that. And then finally, we have some fans who sent in, I think at least two, that sent in short films a long time ago that they wanted reviewed for No Views. And I think we'll do them, probably.
Hey, man. No Views is like the cult classic of Rick entertainment.
Yeah, should we make it like Patreon only or something? Yeah, like No Views, Patreon only.
I think the No Views segment was my favorite part of the Christmas special.
That's
so
crazy. It's great to hear, but we did it kind of like as that'd be an easy thing for us to throw in a segment for. But yeah, it was kind of Christmassy, and we happened to stumble upon a pretty apt short film.
I thought the jokes in that were on point too.
The kid that got work done.
Well, speaking of Air Joe, I will be reviewing his giant toaster this weekend. So I bought a Wagyu steak. So I'm going to be sticking a high quality steak into this.
Oh my God.
And cooking it. So I'll be filming that this weekend. So thank you, Air Joe. And I'll try to be making ribs in it. I don't know. I think that's going to be a disaster too.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
We actually have this Sunday, we have a Box Mac posting that we shot like, I want to say in like September. Definitely before the Falstaff Halloween show, we shot.
Oh, right.
There's two more, actually. It's like Simple Every Day, I think, is the next one. And then,
oh,
or something like that, Essentials, I don't know. And then the one after that is the, remember, like the pasta tube?
Yeah. See, the thing is, like, I've seen all of these, so I don't know what's been posted and what's not.
Yeah, I don't either. I have to keep a list.
And what is the future of Box Mac? Like, do you think we're going to be doing more of them this year? Is the hot question.
More than, like, last year, for instance?
Yes.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, 19 is what we did last year, and between the specials and everything, I feel like that's still a pretty healthy number. I don't feel like it's like a phased out show.
No.
I'll be honest. Like, I'm kind of jonesing for a few more Box Macs. Like, I am a little in the mood for Box Mac.
I don't know. I agree. I think Box Mac, it has a lot of energy behind it.
Yeah.
Especially when we do take breaks from it, I think we come back stronger. So when people are like, oh, where's the Box Mac? Where's the Box Mac? It's like, sometimes, you know, you need a little break, and then you can come back and actually have a good Box Mac.
Yeah, you can just come over it over and over again. Like, you know, you're gonna beg me to stop.
Yes.
But you're gonna start saying owl and stuff. I don't know, TV seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like an episode of Mandalorian comes out once a week. Just in
general. Yeah, exactly.
But,
exactly.
Yeah, so I'm, and we have quite a few Macs from recent unboxings, and there's like plenty of Box Mac content. And I have a lot of like, you know, it's probably obvious from the shows, but I store up talking points. Just little things that I find funny, and you know, it's like ways to fit in little musings. And so I've got like tons of those. So yeah, I'm Box Mac is kind of like our, I don't know, like it's like our flagship podcast in a way. It's like, it's where we make our most definite statements about the world.
I think so.
I'm excited to make more. I have no idea how it will shake out I'll put it this way. I'm not likely to like try to like shoot a bunch without you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see if we can like have Matt shoot them. Like, I think I'd rather just schedule the time and shoot a bunch of Box Macs.
I agree. I think I'm not sick of shooting them.
It's always fun. It's always a good time.
It's always a good time. We always get dinner or get lunch or dinner after.
Yeah.
So
after all the Macs.
And other things I'm working on.
Yes.
I've a video about Viking's blood, which is a mead, a cherry mead, that I have mostly filmed. I just have to write a script for. So it's basically a cherry mead. It's in the vein of all the meads I've been doing, but it actually came out really good. And it's like, it's one of those things where it came out, it was like like wine you buy at the store, it tasted like that. Mm. And so I was like pretty proud of it. So I think that'll be a good video.
Interesting. So, you already shot that, or is that you're just working on that?
I shot all the B-roll like of me making it, right. And now I just have to like write a script, fill it in with the blog posts, and I'll have different lengths of beard and all the.
Yeah, I was downloading a bunch of your videos to post on Daily Motion because people probably don't know we redundantly post all of our videos to Daily Motion. I don't know, in prep, or it's like a doomsday prep kind of thing. It's like in the event that our channel shuts down or something like that, there's at least like a completely duplicated version of the channel elsewhere. It's just for diversity. Yeah. But I was downloading all your, like, I don't know, your recent 10 videos or something, and it was crazy how like the beard lengths like from one video to the next in a fairly short period of time.
Like, well, I just trimmed it probably to the chagrin of some people because they're like, oh, sweet beard length and stuff like that. But I just trimmed it because Gabe started just like yanking on it. I was like, gotta get rid of this shit.
That's awesome.
So anyway, and then the one other thing I'm working on is I'll be mixing some mead this weekend to use with Air Joe's barrel that he sends. So Air Joe is getting a lot of play.
A lot of play, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the two things he sent were kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I've liked all of the briefcase grill, the other shitty grill, the cardboard grill, so.
I think it's great. I think it's like, for a show like yours requires interesting products, and you don't want to spend all your time buying those products or all your money buying those products. And if there's a fan who wants to basically bankroll the content of your show, like, why the hell not?
Yeah, why the hell not? So, yeah, I'll be doing the big toaster this weekend. So, yeah, it is fun. It's fun.
Now, are you thinking that, like, you're going to do another heavy EJ Cooks year? Or are you wanting to do, like, are there any of your like sort of sub series you want to go back to, or?
I mean, it's probably just going to be a case by case basis. I mean, it's really what I'm interested in,
right?
But mostly it's going to probably be EJ Cooks. I don't think there'll be anything else. There might be some gaming stuff if that strikes my fancy.
Yeah.
But I think it's mostly going to be barbecue stuff because that's what's getting play right now. I mean, with my view count, and so that excites me, and that gives me more ideas, and then it's just a feedback loop.
Sometimes when we make stuff that hits a little more, it's exciting, and I want to do more of it. And then other times, like, I want to rebel against it.
Yeah, I know. You're like, fuck it, 20 more. No views.
Yeah. Like, I want to make the thing. Well, there's also, it's funny because, you know, when you have a small fan community, you kind of get to know who likes what, and you see common commenters and stuff. And you can really tell what kind of fan they are after a while. Like, some people are just there for Boxmack, obviously. And some people, I would say the majority of the fans are there for both Boxmack and What's in Jones' Cart. And probably not a lot else. And they'll stick around for supplemental Boxmack content, but not to any ridiculous extent. You know, like they probably won't stick around for a whole Boxmack commentary, but they might watch an After Hours, and that's probably like the majority. And then there's like people who like they'll watch Chunt's Nest, and they'll watch some of the other, like, Glitter Bitches, and they'll watch that stuff and kind of branch out a little bit more. And then there's, like, the Ride or Die Red Cow Bitches. There's, like, No Views, Kawawi, like, they like Aaron, they don't dislike him. And those are my people, like, right? Those are and actually, I find that most of those people donate to the Patreon.
Yes, so thank you.
Like, the alphas.
So yeah, that's what we're really working on. So the other thing, what in this media landscape are you watching, Frankie?
Well, so I last year I purchased. Well, I'll talk about video games first, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I bought this cool device. It's just an Android tablet, essentially, but it's connected to a gamepad. It's called the GPD gamepad XD, and it's like a $200 emulator machine. And I've been playing a lot of Rogue Squadron for N64 on it. Because it actually plays really nicely. And it's like, I've never had a lot of luck with N64 emulators, and so to have one that actually works pretty well is really exciting. Because I loved N64 when I had one, but obviously it didn't age great, but now I'm kind of like returning to some of the games that really worked for me. And that's a pretty good game.
Yeah. I remember when those emulators started coming out, they always fell apart, and N64 was notoriously hard to emulate. So
yeah, so other games on that that I've, you know, because there's just such a backlog of retro games to check out, mm-hmm. that I and Jump Ness probably inspired me to buy the GPD-XD, because you know there's all these, I never was an RPG guy, and after a while of hearing about how great Chrono Trigger is and shit, I'm like, maybe I want to play that game, maybe I'll give that, you know, maybe I've overlooked some of these games. But I always end up like falling back into my old habits of like action adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was a kid, I played a lot of TMNT, the arcade game. And,
oh, yeah.
There's a third one I never played. I never owned it. It was the Manhattan Project.
Oh, yeah, for the NES?
Yeah. And I played lots of Turtles in Time, but there's just like a middle one that I never played. And it was in the style of the arcade game, but never actually had an arcade release. It was just an NES game.
Yeah. No, I played a lot with my cousin.
Yeah, so I've been trying to get the fuck through that game. It is so hard and so insane, and even with save states and shit, like, you know, because even with save states, you don't want to be, like, save stating every 10 feet, you know? So,
yeah, you have some, like, pride, you know?
Yeah, so you just use it to kind of, like, you know, balance the scales of difficulty a little, so, like, you can actually advance in the game whatsoever. But it is fun, and it was more reminiscent of the cartoon show, especially like the later seasons, than
mm-hmm.
Than the second one had been. And anything that kind of like nails that 80s Turtles thing is I'm all about. So I was playing a lot of that. And I'd love to do, that's something else I'd like to do this year, is I guess essentially an EJ review style Frankie video is kind of what I want to do.
Dude,
I'd
totally love to see an EJ review in Frankie's style.
Yeah, well, I guess it would be the best way to describe it would be like just what most YouTube videos are. Like, you know, it was like some guy, somewhat well lit, talking excitedly about the fucking thing he bought. I'd like to do that because I feel like I have a really solid case. Like a really solid argument for why this particular device solves a tremendous number of problems.
I think I've encouraged you in the past to do this, and I want to see it. So
yeah, I think that's one of those year goals. And then also I've been playing Jedi Fallen Order for Xbox One. I do have an Xbox One, believe it or not. I bought it a long time ago and never really played much of it. I played the Arkham games and not a lot. And there was like a cool Rareware. It was called like Rare 30. There's like 30 games from Rareware. It's a lot of fun to play on Xbox One. And of course, Cuphead before it came out for Switch. Yeah. Oh, I've been playing a lot of Cuphead for Switch, and I can't. Talk about fucking hard games.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I cannot get past. There's like this robot that just. I'm just fucked. I just don't know what I'm supposed to do. It's like you've reached the end of your investment in this game. But Jedi Fallen Order is pretty good. There's a lot of cool ideas in it. I'll say from a gameplay point of view, it's fair. Like, it's pretty good. You know, like, the lightsaber combat's cool, and it works all the same ways you've come to expect these Uncharted, Batman, you know, Star Wars games to play. But from a Star Wars point of view, it's actually quite cool because it takes prequel era, Clone Wars animated series era, original trilogy era stuff, and it kind of puts them all into one more cohesive aesthetic than the films themselves did.
Yeah.
Where they all feel really disparate and like they're created by very different people. This is really like, you know, you have Saw Gerrera from Rogue One in there, and you've got AT-ATs, and you've got X-Wings and shit, but then you've also got like the Clone Wars kind of just wrapped up. There's like Jedi Starfighters from the prequel era that you see like crash stuff places. You go to Dorthamir, which is like Darth Maul's planet, and you see like his people, and so like a lot of the lore that came from Clone Wars is in there, but it feels more live action because the art style is realistic and not like the animated series. You go to Kashyyyk, which is like still under siege from Revenge of the Sith, and so it's actually pretty cool, and the story is neat too. I guess it's kind of a ripoff of Rebels, which I never watched, but it's basically like a Padawan survived, like a 10-year-old basically survived Order 66. Yep. And he cut himself off from the Force, threw away his lightsaber. He's been working on like junkers, and he's a Jew in hiding, essentially. And for a series of circumstances, he has to start using the Force again, and kind of gets thrown back into the rebellion. And and there's actually a really cool, very cinematic sequence where they flash back to when he was 10, and you're on like a freighter that has a bunch of clone troopers on it, and the clone troopers are really friendly with him, giving him high fives and stuff, and like while you're in the middle of training, Order 66 starts happening.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and like so, like people around him are suddenly getting murdered, and it's pretty good. It's for between that and Mandalorian, we did have some good Star Wars things come out in the last couple months.
Well, it's true. I think for some reason with Star Wars video games, I always gave them more credit, and I'm not sure if that's just the programming growing up watching Star Wars. But
a lot of stuff, the LucasArts people always sort of knew the brand better sometimes than the filmmakers.
Yeah, especially the Jedi Outcast and
I've been playing that on Switch too. I can't get through it.
I think that's a good segue into Mandalorian. I think I've been, really enjoying that, the whole series, and it definitely gets Star Wars, and it's not ambitious,
Did you like Firefly? Did you watch that?
I did, and I did like it at the time. It does remind me of that, because
I think
Western.
The things I liked about Firefly, I like about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it does kind of open the door. Because on one hand, like, I feel like it's pretty faithful to the Star Wars universe. Like, I don't feel like I'm like, wow, this is, what the hell is all this? But on the other hand, it feels like it did what the movies couldn't, which is, it kind of was like, well, what else could Star Wars be?
Yeah, it scales things back, but at the same time, it feels pertinent .
I mean, Star Wars doesn't have to be Michael Bay films. One of the most epic moments of the original trilogy is blowing up the first Death Star, and it's just a 15-minute dogfight. Not cutting away a lot. There's no lightsabers. You're just in cockpits watching these men try to.
Oh, yeah.
It's still pretty tame.
I was watching the Harney cut the other day of the first Star Wars, and I forgot how like pulled back some things are, and like how it's like things play out in like wides, and they're just it looks like 70s, but also but it feels modern. So it's
this weird meta thing happened to entertainment at some point where you have to subvert everything that came before it. Mm-hmm. Like I was like Gloria just recently started, like she watches The Little Mermaid, the one from 1990. Mm-hmm. And it's so straightforward. And like, I was just, and it's pretty good, but I was just thinking like, what if this movie came out today? Like, I think people would be like, the fuck is this? like she falls in love with a prince, and then like, there's a big obstacle, and then she ends up with the prince. So it's weird that we started holding ourselves to weird story standards where you can't tell. And I think that's what I'm trying to say is I think that's one of the things I really appreciate about Mandalorian is sometimes the clicheness of the show is its style.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, you know, you might, it's like a double-edged criticism where sometimes you're like, well, that was kind of a basic way to go. And then on the other hand, you're like, well, I kind of liked that it was sort of a basic way to go.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of mercenaries board a ship and try to pull off a heist, and one by one they betray each other, and then, you know, he ends up with the ransom. Very classic story. I mean, how about the episode where they just straight up do Seven Samurai?
Yeah, but it was one of the best episodes in my opinion.
Yeah, great. It's great. And,
like,
and there's nothing,
you don't
there's
have
nothing
to...
cynical. I feel like almost all entertainment has some degree of cynicism to it now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, very little cynicism in that show.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of funny because I, you know, I recently saw Knives Out from...
Yeah.
Rian Johnson, and I don't feel like I felt the cynicism of Last Jedi in that film. Like, I felt like he was just trying to entertain me with Knives Out, and so I kind of liked it more.
Maybe he should have just been given the whole trilogy. I mean, for people who hated Last Jedi, which includes me, I know that sounds crazy, but, like, I wonder if he had just been given an opportunity to do his own thing from the top, would things have gone better? I don't know.
Maybe. Because, like I said, I'm not, like, in love with Knives Out, but I appreciate that it was trying to entertain me. And I don't feel like I felt the same thing from Last Jedi.
Right.
And same thing in Mandalorian, I think it's just trying to entertain me. It's not trying to do too much. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, people will disagree, but The Last Jedi does seem to hold at least some percentage of its audience in contempt. And, like, I know, like I'm sure Rian Johnson would be like, no, I'm challenging you. It's like, no, you hate me. You don't want me in the seat. It's fine. I mean, the Rise of Skywalker, the third one there, was just such baffling fucking trash.
I don't understand it at all. Like, I think, and it's kind of funny because I had my live reactions on, like, our Slack, and I think you were kind of, like, I was a little bit confused when I got out of it, and I was like, I think I liked it, maybe? But then the more you sit with the film, it starts to piss you off more.
Yeah. Well, because it is a trick. I mean, everything we've read from leaks suggests that, like, the movie was a disaster, and the studio started to be like, well, the only way we can really recover from this without spending double the budget and trying to recover it is, you know, anything that's confusing, we can just sort of try to diminish the negative impact by cutting it out.
Yeah, or just, like, keep cutting to new stuff.
Yeah, so they're just like, just don't worry about it. Just keep moving. And it is crazy how successful one viewing experience can be at that, where, you know, because your brain can only process so many story elements at once. And so it is pretty effective, where you're like, I guess I'm on your ride.
I liked things. But then when you sit with a story, it's just you can't stick with anything. And also, like, Palpatine, why is he there?
It's just so stupid. And the only reason was because, like, we need a bigger bad than Kylo Ren. And I'm like, why? Like, by the third movie, like, the whole fucking thing is that, like, this sniveling kid becomes the supreme ruler. Like, I would have loved... Imagine if the opening sequence of Rise of Skywalker was like, we see a Kylo Ren we don't recognize. This is a guy who, like, for a year now has been ruling, let's say he's been ruling some major portion of the galaxy at that point, because the First Order just grew in strength under his leadership. And now he's, it's, you know, it could echo, it's like poetry, it rhymes. It could echo the Return of the Jedi thing where, Luke has all of this growth and maturity between films.
Mm.
Imagine if that happened to the villain, or like now he is more of a Darth Vader type, where he doesn't seem quite so, because Vader seemed like really kind of calm and confident in his evilness.
Mm-hmm.
He never seemed all that, he wasn't angsty, certainly. So imagine if like all that angst and, you know, so let's say that by the third movie, like that struggle with the light side that Kylo was having, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that would be, that's an interesting place to start the story.
Yeah.
Awesome. I want to repeat for an audience, because you and I were chatting about this and we were like feeding off of each other a lot. Can we have a fucking costume change for Rey, please?
Well, we're talking about with Luke. Like, Luke, not only costume, but demeanor and actions. Like, every movie, there's a progression. And I don't feel like with Rey, especially with the costume, it's like the same scavenger costume she had in the first movie.
Just another costume, please. If you must make your crap movie, fine. But can you just give me a different costume? Like, really the same stupid costume? Is that the new Jedi costume? How about just a new fucking costume? just to spice things up a little bit. Because if you can't possibly write any growth for this character, could you, like, telegraph it with clothes?
Yeah.
just something. It's just really weird how static all the characters are in this thing. Like,
you know, in any pop culture thing, like Daenerys Stormborn has different costumes for each season. like everybody
confusing.
Moves, you know, everyone progresses.
Yeah. It's very confusing. I really don't know what happened there. I mean, it sounds like studio meddling, and it sounds like they didn't have much to begin with, and they started in a bad place, but yikes.
And we were talking about, I think Luke Skywalker is weirdly an underrated character.
I think so, yeah. So I love Luke. I mean, that talk about, like, you know, like, we all love a really deep character arc, like where somebody starts on the other end of the planet and ends up on the other end of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Walter White being, like, the prime example.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jimmy McGill arc is really pretty awesome, too.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the teaser for Better Call Saul?
The one where he's, like, in the backseat of the cab or whatever.
There was one that was like, I don't know, he was in like some sort of tent or something, and he was getting clients in, and he looked more like Saul Goodman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for the new season, because it seems like he's really embraced his dark side.
Yeah, it's awesome. But yeah, so Luke is one of the, as far as trilogies go, one of the great arcs, in my opinion, from farm bitch boy to
whining about like power converters, and then by the end he's like a pretty solemn monk. So it's
he grows into a man, and he goes from rushing this evil sorcerer and getting his fucking hand cut off for it, and almost, you know, cracking his balls open on Cloud City. Because from that to in the third movie, he shows up in handcuffs, refusing to harm anyone.
Yeah. No, it's awesome.
It's really
awesome.
Cool. Yeah. To me, that's one of the coolest. Like, Return of the Jedi is not my favorite of the original trilogy, but that Luke transformation is probably one of my favorite Star Wars things.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And the way it was, like, really characterized in the Jabba the Hutt sail barge, like, action sequence and all that, and the way that it built up who is the new Luke Skywalker, like, do we know this character? I just think that's all really... My favorite Star Wars is from the beginning of A New Hope to when Jabba's sail barge blows up. and then after that, like, I'm a little less invested, but that's, like, for me, kind of perfect.
Yeah. And there's some good stuff in the Emperor's Throne Room.
Yeah, I love all that stuff, too. I love the battle, the space battle for Endor. I think it should have been Han in the Millennium Falcon. Not Lando.
I think Han is just misused in most of Return of the Jedi.
In most of Star Wars at this point.
At this point, yes. and then, let's see. What was I going to say?
I watched Ricky Gervais's monologue, which I adored. I mean, obviously some people really hate that sort of negativity or like mean insult comedy, and others don't. I fell down like a big Don Rickles hole lately.
You were sharing a little bit of that. How did you start that?
Well, how did I start that? I think it was because, I saw The Irishman recently.
Mm.
And, the new Scorsese movie that's like 3.5 hours long. That's like what it's known for, is it's fucking long. but people will. I mean, it's only tonight. There's like a 3-hour episode of The Bachelor that everybody needs to watch. people will watch 3 hours.
They will.
But first of all, I really like The Irishman, and I think it's really, I think it stands right up there with, certainly with like Casino. Goodfellas. Goodfellas is like kind of in a league of its own. That's a fucking good movie. But I think it's really good. I think it's really special. And the de-aging is a little distracting, like people say, but it's not. You have to suspend your disbelief for it, sort of in the same way you sometimes have to suspend your disbelief for makeup and for prosthetics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, you're aware that there's a special effect at play, and it's trying to help you immerse yourself in the story. It's not it would love to be invisible, but, they're just not there. It's an experiment, essentially, because they, for those who don't know, they didn't do, like, the mocap thing. They didn't put golf balls on their faces. They actually like shot with infrared cameras that could capture the facial stuff, and then they had to do that all in post. So it was a pretty crazy achievement, and probably the first of its kind, where you're sinking millions and millions of dollars into visual effects where nothing blows up and nothing's in outer space, or there's no aliens. So it's all cool. But there's a sequence that features comedian Don Rickles in, like, 1960s Copacabana, performing for the mob, which he really did in real life. He's played by Jim Norton, which is really fun because Jim Norton has kind of similar sensibilities. And I always am interested in like how would somebody like a non-actor like Jim portray this iconic human being like Don. And, he doesn't do an impersonation. It's Jim, but it has a Don cadence and a Don sensibility to it. And then from there, YouTube recommended to me this really nice video of Scorsese and Robert De Niro reminiscing with Don Rickles. Don was like 90, and Scorsese and Robert De Niro are in their 70s. But I love a good, when interesting old men get together and talk, I'm really captivated. And
I think it was on the AARP YouTube channel.
Yeah, it was actually, yeah. It's a series called The Dinner with Don, where he sits down with like modern famous people that he doesn't necessarily know.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of like does his insult comedy thing to them. And they all just love it. Like Paul Rudd was on, Vince Vaughn was on, Amy Poehler was on, Judd Apatow was on. They all, just everybody. Like Don, having gone down the rabbit hole of Don Rickles, you start to realize like there's a lot of things special about this guy. For one thing, he's fucking fast. I mean, comedically, he's really, really quick. Like, being funny is so hard. And because comedy. One way to think about comedy is it's making connections that maybe somebody else, it's making a creative connection. It's taking A and T together. But then you also have to craft it, word it, phrase it. This guy can just do that on the fly. He can come up with a zinger that's 3 words long or 2 words long, in the span of a very short time. And he did that right up until he was 90. I mean, even in this fairly somber conversation with 270-year-olds.
he's
being
sharp.
Very funny. And he died like maybe 2 months after that. But the other thing that interests me is in the wake of this Ricky Gervais monologue, which is this big fuck you to the entire room, Don Rickles said fuck you to everybody all the time, constantly.
Yeah.
And yet everybody laughed. And that was, I guess he was really close with Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Sinatra traveled with organized crime.
And so
Don Rickles was constantly the big famous story, I guess, is that like they were in a club in Vegas and Rickles said to to Frank, like, there's this girl that I'm trying to impress, and I think I might be able to win her over, but I want to show her that I know you. Can you come over to the table and say hi to us? And he's like, yeah, of course. And he goes, don't come over right away, you know, give it some time. So eventually Frank comes over and he goes, Don, how you doing? And Rickles goes, Frank, can't you see what we're eating right now? And he just, you know, over there, on the set of Casino, when De Niro, like, forgot one line, and Rickles just plowed into him. He's like, you can't remember one line with all your method acting and your breathing and your bullshit. Just say the line so we can go home, please. He's just so funny, and everybody found it fun. Like, he can make fun of Robert De Niro's face, and he'll crack up laughing. You know, again, going back to our topic about people off mic laughing, like the entire crew of Casino cracking up because Don Rickles is talking. And but he had what he has that Ricky doesn't, unfortunately for Ricky, is there's something about this dude's face. Mm-hmm. There's something about the way he carries his body. There's something about his voice that's like, this guy loves everybody. This guy doesn't hold any negativity for, like, you just knew it. And so, yeah, it was funny to be made fun of by him. There was nothing mean about it. Like, not even a little bit. You didn't even have to, like, convince somebody to be like, no, he doesn't mean it. It's like, no, you knew he didn't mean it. Yeah. And, Ricky means it.
So. Yeah, I mean, I loved all the,
I did too.
Golden Globe stuff, and
I think you can mean it, and it can be funny. I mean, I think you can fuck you to somebody, mean it, and it for it to be funny. But I also just found it interesting to study a comedic master who got away with shit. I mean, you know, our friend Aaron is sort of like that. Yeah, you know, some people, he's somewhere in between, obviously. But growing up with Aaron, like, he could. Yeah, and his flamboyance helps him too. But
yeah.
He could say anything to anybody, and they would kind of get over it, you know.
All right, Frankie, man.
That was longer than we thought it would be.
Oh, definitely. It was definitely longer, but it's a treat for the Patreon.
Getting a high bar here.
Yeah.
The future ones.
Exactly. But yeah. So, anything else you want to close us out with, or?
Let's see. Was there anything else I wanted to say? I wrote down all this crap. Ninja Turtles Studio. Yeah, I think that basically covers it. Maybe next time I'll talk about. I'll throw this in. I'd love to see if we can start work on a Halloween episode earlier this year, so that, like, we can actually figure out what we're doing and kind of have something a little more special than last year. Even though people liked it, I would really like to. To blow the roof off with Halloween this year.
Oh, yeah. You know, I always love stepping into the narrative with those episodes. And I've been kind of jealous, especially, you know, we've been watching all these Hollywood round tables and all these things. I'm like, maybe we should do a narrative soon.
Yeah, I'm all about it. You and I chatted about, like, maybe just getting together for a day and chatting about stuff and seeing if anything takes us.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, but at the same time, it's, you know,
I mean,
a lot of directors riff on the same concepts and, you know, perfect them, so.
That is the trouble, is, like, almost anything that interests me, I've explored reasonably well in a past film.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'd have to, I don't know, but there's lots of stuff to talk about. So, or, you know, you also don't have to make a movie that, like, says some major thing. You know, you can make movies that don't say fucking shit.
or you don't even know what they're saying.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think
that's what art is.
I mean, I haven't made a feature for 6 years, so 7 years. So
you're different. You're a different person.
Yeah, I'm a very different person. But yeah, I mean, we shot Sexually Frank 10 years ago.
That's crazy.
I mean, like, I don't think I can even watch that movie now because I'm like, oh my god, like, it's a kid that has these ideas that I don't really have anymore.
Yeah, I remember going to one of your, like, I don't know,
symposium.
Screenings in your thesis, and I was just,
what's this guy doing?
It's a different world.
Yeah, it's a different world.
It's not color corrected. What's going on?
I can't imagine. I don't know what showing that movie to a room of grad students would look like these days.
I don't know.
I don't think it would go very well.
I don't think so.
All right, so I'll talk to you in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, we're going to try to do this every 2 weeks or so, give or take. Be patient with us because we are making a ton of content for the channel itself. But so this is what we're going to try to do. Thank you, Frankie.
Thank you for setting it up. This is awesome.